come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
More a solo. But tonight...
Don't call it a comeback.
Welcome back to the Loyal Sons podcast, presented by the boys of Capel Faithful. That's at Capel Faithful on Twitter. Follow us there and follow us here wherever you listen to your podcasts. The Loyal Sons podcast, a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt athletics fix. Today is Thursday, September 30th, 2021. Week 5 of the college football season, and the Pitt Panthers are back.
Hell yeah.
We're so back.
And now, a dramatic reading of the Pitt New Hampshire box score.
Kenny Pickett, 403 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 31 minutes of football.
Jordan Addison, 6 catches for 179 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Izzy Abanaconda, 130 yards on 17 touches.
Rodney Hammond, 17 carries, 100 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
First downs, your Pitt Football Panthers 35, New Hampshire Wildcats 8.
The Pittsburgh Panthers, 7 for 11 on third down, New Hampshire 0 for 12.
Ben Sauls, 0 for 2 on extra points. Are you kidding me?
The Pitt Panthers, 707 total yards, a school record. New Hampshire, 160.
The Pitt Panthers, 13.8 yards per pass attempt. New Hampshire, 2.5.
Final score, the Pittsburgh Panthers, 77. The New Hampshire Wildcats, 7.
What an ass whooping.
Those poor Wildcats, dude.
So, I think the proof is in the pudding there. What a statement game by the Pitt Panthers, as much as you can have a statement game against an FCS school. But still.
What a sadness, all right?
Hey, I'm not trying to take away anyone's celebration of this.
You know, this is just what we needed. I mean, sure, we could have maybe had a more formidable opponent, but... I just knew coming in that Narduzzi was going to, you know, try to hang 70 out there, get that bad taste out of our mouth. And any day that we can pad Pickett's stats, have him throw him for 5 touchdowns, 400 yards, that's a good day of football for me.
Yeah, I remember coming into the game, pulling up the stats and seeing Pickett was 4 for 4 with like 78 yards and no touchdowns. And the game was already like 21-0. I'm like, damn it, they're going to take Pickett out and he's going to have a bad stat line. It's going to hurt his... end of the year awards or whatever, or his Heisman campaign even. But yeah, they left them in. We left at halftime, and what do you know? They tried to Kenny back out there again to get that 400. Love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, overall, just an impressive game start to finish, not just by the starters, but also the many backups that were able to see the field. I appreciate the fan service. I think we were all, you know, buying a tall ladder and a pretty strong rope after last week's game. And for them to do this objective fan service, I think it is pretty cool.
Good for the team too. They had some momentum going into the ACC play. The team's probably feeling good about themselves.
They still owe us a few. Well, I still want to win these next couple of weeks to make up for the Western Michigan game. This is a good start, but Narduzzi's not off my shit list yet.
Never will be.
Yeah. So realistically, and I'm asking like realistically, like put on our real football brain caps right now.
does this game make you feel better, and to what extent about our chances going into ACC play?
I said this at the game. I watched the highlights. I was even more impressed. I don't care if Pitt was playing the Shaler Titans, New Hampshire, or the Steelers. Some of the throws that Pickett made were really good. I mean, he was hitting everybody in stride on the deep throws, on the run, left and right, getting through his reads. So I'm not worried about this offense. I'm not worried about Pickett. I mean, the defense showed signs of life, but I don't know. That was a pretty terrible team. So let's see what they do this week.
Yeah, I think what is really promising was the rest of the ACC is just like the whole thing is just the Coastal Division, but now it's spread over into the Atlantic and everything's wide open. It looks like no teams are good.
Our contagion has spread from the Coastal to whatever the other division is called.
Yeah, the good old Atlantic. I mean, it's been dominated by Clemson for so long. Seeing the mighty Tigers at 2-2, it's pretty refreshing to think that, you know what, maybe we'll have a different champ this year.
Yeah, they ruined our chance of getting game day at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, who thought Clemson would blow that? I mean, we did too, but mostly them.
I wouldn't have been too pleased if we were going into that game. And the only reason they didn't come was because Clemson laid an egg against NC State. So maybe it was a good thing we lost to Western Michigan. Totally kidding. Don't take that serious.
So I only have two notes about the game against New Hampshire. The first was this the keep Shockey Jacques Louis from transferring game?
Yeah, there was definitely a very intentional effort to get him involved early. The first play of the game, they gave him a little jet sweep. Then, you know, he had finished the game with four catches for 50 yards and a touchdown. It was very clear that they're trying to use him more than they have been. Jared Wayne sat out, not really sure what the issue was. I don't know if that was announced at all. But yeah, very clearly wanted to get him involved, and hopefully, you know, this springboards him a little bit, because I think it never hurts to have too many weapons and to have a guy with, you know, game breaking speed like he does. I'd like to see him, you know, come into his own a little bit.
Yeah. I think, Dylan, you had mentioned something about there were rumors of him being pretty displeased with his role in the offense coming out of the last couple of games. So
I don't know if there were rumors so much as I watched him throw a temper tantrum on the sideline of the Western Michigan game. That was my rumor that I watched
physical
with my
evidence.
Eyes.
Yeah. The sources were his eyes. So glad that they could patronize him a little bit against a bad team. My other note is, verbal meme, the guy who's holding hands with his girlfriend and looking over his shoulder at the other girl. That's me. His girlfriend is Izzy, and the girl walking past is Rodney Hammond.
Rodney Hammond, your ACC Rookie of the Week. I tell you what, we were talking about this a little before we started recording, but he looks like the most like a running back when he has the ball. You know, he's making quick cuts, running through guys. Obviously, Izzy is put together physically. He's a specimen, but Rodney Hammond just looks like a ball player.
His physicality really surprised me. I mean, I looking at him, you thought it'd be quick guy juking left and right, but he was running through tackles. He was carrying guys.
Yeah, I mean, it was just good to see any semblance of a running game. I mean, Izzy wasn't bad himself. I mean, we touched on it. 17 touches, 100 yards. He was more effective in the passing game, and I think we've been high on him in the passing game because he does have pretty great hands. But I mean, just chunk after chunk every time he touched the ball. I think it really showed the ways that he can be used in this offense. And I know the knock on him is that he isn't great at pass protection. He's not as useful in the passing game. And one, I saw him pick up a blitz exceptionally well on one play. And I'm just going to mentally extrapolate that across every single pass protection he's ever done. So he's incredible at it, I've decided. But also they split him out wide and could throw to him. And I love that, and I want more of it.
And with that, I think we've filled our quota on the amount of time we're allowed to talk about a win over New Hampshire.
If you're thinking about tweeting at us, it's New Hampshire. That's what you're supposed to do. They suck. Don't. We know.
Yeah, just go yourself.
Pitt with eight in the box. Here they come again. That's going to be picked off by Mathis. Down the sideline. Touchdown, Pittsburgh.
Okay, moving on.
Seat check. time for a seat check, the weekly segment where we check the temperature of Pat Narduzzi and Mark Whipple's respective seats. Just a reminder, 0 is Dave Wonstadt after beating West Virginia 13-9. 100 is Mike Haywood after, well, you know what happened. This week, I think we'll probably be pretty quick. You know, last week was what it was, and we're not going to talk about it. But, guys, give me a temperature on Pat Narduzzi and Mark Whipple seats. David, go.
67 degrees. I said 68 last week, and I don't think that you can save your job by beating an FCS school. But we did win this game by 10 touchdowns, and it showed that Pat Narduzzi has enough, like, human awareness to be like, oh, I did a bad last week, so this week I'm going to try way harder to compensate for it. And just him having that level of awareness is really refreshing for me. So I dropped him 1 degree.
I think I said 90 degrees last week. I've come back down to earth a little bit. Was heated then. I'm still going to put him up at 78 degrees, so I'm still hot. Still need sunscreen if you're a fair-skinned person like myself. I think it can get pretty low because we touch on it all the time. The ACC is up for grabs, so keep winning, it'll get lower. But a loss to Georgia Tech and things will start to fall apart.
Yeah, I said 98 last week. Might have been a little high at the time, but I'm going to knock them down to 75 degrees. Probably a little more realistic. Still a little toasty, but I think there's hope ahead, and, you know, coming out and putting up 77 points doesn't hurt. But at the same time, it doesn't save the job. It's still the same idea. We still have to win these next couple of games to keep me happy. If we can get to 5-1, I think we're back to where we were, you know, after week two in my eyes. So we'll see what happens. Mark Whipple, guys, I think his seat's pretty cool. You know, not much we can ask of him at this point. I mean, it is what it is. We can throw the ball. Probably still can't run, but
yeah, Dill, I kind of got to agree with you on that one. I don't think a head coach can cool his seat by beating an FCS school, but I do think a coordinator can prove themselves by scoring 11 touchdowns. I'm sorry, 10, because one was a pick six, but 10 touchdowns in any game. It kind of makes it harder to be like, yeah, this guy's terrible at his job, but we do have like the number one most efficient offense in the NCAA.
All right, that's seat check this week.
In the red zone, Pickett to the air. He lets it go. Touchdown. Jacques Louis in the back of the end zone.
And now it's time for a little Mad Online, where we find the most dumb, the most asinine BS that some Pitt fan decided to type up on their computer and then hit send on to share with the internet. John, you found a pretty good one during the Pitt drubbing of New Hampshire. What do you have for us this week?
Yeah, this guy was pretty mad about Pitt facing a terrible team like New Hampshire. But this is also the Mad Online candidate because it made me really mad. This guy on Panther Lair posted, "I watch college football as a form of entertainment. Yesterday's Pitt game, the New Hampshire game, wasn't entertaining at all. In fact, it was boring. The result was predetermined. Pitt didn't benefit. Few people saw it." I was stopping right there. I was entertained by watching Pickett throw for 400 yards in basically half of football, but I digress. He continues, "Am I crazy to say I would rather Pitt had played Oklahoma and lost to a number 4 team due to a last minute field goal?"
Yes. Yes, you are crazy. I will stop you right there. That guy is out of his mind.
He said, "Losing stinks, but at least the game was worth watching."
Like, only Pitt fans can find a way to bitch about winning by 70 points. I mean, those are the type of people who complain about paying taxes on when they win the lottery.
I don't get this because as Pitt fans, we've seen a tough schedule basically every year in the non-conference. We're playing ranked teams almost every week in the non-conference, with the exception of like a Villanova or Austin Peay here and there.
Villanova, who covered
Notre Dame, Penn State, UCF, and we're losing those games. And at the end of the year, everyone says, "Man, if we played those cupcake teams, we could have had 9 wins this year." So you go from being mad about having too hard of a schedule to being mad that we're playing these cupcakes. Like, I just want to win.
I just don't get what he's saying about, like, that game not being entertaining. That was the most fun I've had watching a Pitt game in a very long time.
No, like, stress, that was just a lot of scoring.
No stress, scoring at will. We got to see, you know, some stuff that we really wanted to see. So, like an efficient running game. All of our running backs had over like 5.5 yards of carry. It was just fun. Pickett
everyone needs those from time to time.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, but under no circumstances is a loss ever better than a win.
I can tell you what, I wouldn't have been all cheery going out to Mario's in Oakland for some post-game beers if Pitt had lost on a last-second field goal. But, you know, winning by 70 points, that'll do that for me. So this guy, you know, he can sit back on his couch, watch these tight games. But I'm going to be down in North Shore watching Pitt beat FCS teams for the rest of my years.
I've seen enough close Pitt losses against good teams in my life.
So. Yes. After what this football program has put Pitt fans through the last 20 years, how can you sit there with a straight face, I'm assuming, and type about how, no, F this win. I want a close, heartbreaking Pitt loss, as if that hasn't been delivered to you ad nauseum for the last 20 years.
This guy's a real sick son of a bitch.
To the air again for Pickett. This time he throws it to Addison. Nice move, and he stays on his feet. Jordan Addison breaking free, and he will score.
Next!
All right, fellas. Well, now that we're out of non-conference play and we're entering ACC play this week, kicking off against Georgia Tech, let's do a little bit of a little around the ACC recap. You know, last week was a wild week in the ACC. We have a lot of those in this beautiful conference, but things have really shaken up last week and nothing makes sense as usual. Everything's blown wide open. So let's get right into it.
Well, first of all, coastal chaos is obviously continuing because why wouldn't it? But that's gone over to the Atlantic. Things are looking different. Clemson went down to the Wolfpack, North Carolina State. And yeah, the Demon Deacons, 4-0, looking good. They control their own destiny there. Did you see that one coming, David?
Yeah, obviously. Everyone knew the Demon Deacons were going to be loaded. And everyone knew that a Boston College team that lost Phil Dracovic was also going to start undefeated. No, nothing makes sense. Everything is chaos and insanity. And I love this conference, even though it's far and away the worst in Power Five right now, especially when our constant excuse for our own lack of success, which is Clemson, is really sputtering right now. It's just, you gotta love it. You really gotta love it.
I think my favorite part of this weekend was just the confirmation that this is not your standard Clemson team that's going to push around the ACC. I would love to see a new champion come out this year. Hopefully Pitt, but seriously, to see the potential that, you know, maybe there will be a different team represented in Charlotte this year, that would be huge. And then I also enjoyed Sam Howell and the Tar Heels getting absolutely drubbed by Georgia Tech. I was worried about them earlier in the preseason, but I really do think it was a bunch of unwarranted hype. Mac Brown, as usual, wins the offseason, but here they are. They're looking like a middle-of-the-pack coastal team.
It seems like schools that recruit exceptionally well never have to like rebuild. Even when they graduate a bunch of stars, all they have to do is reload with a bunch of 4 and 5 stars. Unless they're in the ACC, in which case, apparently, if you lose a couple starters on offense, you are then just handicapped for the rest of the year because North Carolina looks lost. And so does Clemson, which was, and I want to stick on that one because did anybody see this coming?
They physically cannot score touchdowns. It's like painful to watch their offense. We talked about this a little bit with Robert in our interview that Georgia Tech's defense looks pretty good. They held Clemson to 14. So we thought, hey, maybe Georgia Tech's defense is decent. And then NC State holds Clemson to 21 in regulation. Their offense is just a mess. I know people say their O-line is bad and DJ isn't good under pressure. How is their offensive line bad? I feel like they get nothing but 5 stars. And how can the talent around that line not make up for it? Like you said, the recruiting still at a high level, highest has ever been to Clemson, but I don't know, Dabo and the boys can't figure it out down there in Death Valley.
How far are we from Dabo blaming all of their issues on like players being distracted by NIL deals?
One more loss. So whenever they come to Pittsburgh that week.
I miss when players loved the game. Now all they love is themselves and all this attention and money.
Everyone's too busy trying to get endorsements, not worried about playing football.
All lives matter.
I was mad at Narduzzi when he said it after the Western Michigan loss. He said something along the lines of, it was a non-conference game. All of our goals are still ahead of us. We're still in the ACC. That pissed me off in the moment. But looking at things now, our chances look pretty good in the Coastal.
Also, real quick, Miami is a pile. I think we all kind of thought they'd be a pile, but I didn't want them to get away in this segment without mentioning that Miami sucks. You suck, Miami. Anyway, is there anyone that you didn't think about before the season that you're a little worried about now in the ACC?
Georgia Tech. One, because they're the next ones in line, and also because apparently they just took it to UNC, and the week before that they played Clemson pretty tight. I know we just got done ragging on Clemson saying they're no good, but they still got ball players. They still got athletes out there. Georgia Tech just looks a lot better than I thought they would at this point. So I still like us in that game for sure. But yeah, I'm a little worried about them. And honestly, the rest of the Coastal, I feel, looks about how they should. Virginia Tech, obviously, at 3-1, sitting pretty. But yeah, I think the Coastal's much more open than I thought it would be at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm. UNC might scare me more when they're bad than they're good. When you go back to whenever Larry Fedora literally owned Pat Narduzzi, that team would just turn out like 3-5 win seasons and just hang 45 against Pitt and win. I don't know. It might happen again. I don't care what the record is. I don't care how bad they look. That's a team that will always scare me. Virginia's 0-2 in the Coastal, but Brendan Armstrong throws for like 400 yards a game. So I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves there either.
That's going to be a fun track meet when we play them.
There's one thing I'm sure of. I'm taking the over in both of those games.
Oh, certainly.
The Pitt-Syracuse highest scoring ACC game might be in jeopardy whenever those teams square off.
You're so mush that that game will be a torrential downpour and no one will be able to put the ball in the air.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Dylan. Didn't you win $1.50 on betting $100 on Pitt money line last week? I think
$1.25. Yeah. Free money alert. Probably should have let you all know beforehand, but put $100 on the Pitt money line -8,000 against New Hampshire, $1.25. Never go broke making a profit.
Love it. A third of a beer at Peter's.
I want to acknowledge NC State real quick, just because if things progress and, you know, Pitt can do what we're hoping they do, we will play them in the ACC championship more than likely. Devin O'Leary looks good. And this is a team that historically gives us fits. So the Irishman is one I would want to keep tabs on. They just kind of, even against, you know, their own will almost, because they kept making stupid mistakes and missing field goals, they beat Clemson. So that's one I want to be on the lookout for.
David, I hate to tell you, but you absolutely just made up his last name. It's just Devin Leary. I don't think he's Irish. What'd I say? Devin O'Leary.
Well, Leary is still Irish.
Okay.
I'm just going to cut that out anyway, so f*** you. Or I'm going to leave it in and tell people I meant it as a joke to make them sound more Irish.
Fair enough.
We see Pickett still going deep.
Deep one! Addison's got it!
Perfect touch. Got the look that he was looking for. His number one receiver in man-to-man coverage, and not too many people's running with that guy.
We're doing things a little bit differently on this episode and all episodes going forward. As we enter ACC play, each week we'll be interviewing writers, broadcasters, podcasters, and content producers who cover Pitt's upcoming opponents to get a better understanding of what Pitt will be up against on Saturdays, and also probably to talk a little bit of shit. This week we spoke with Robert Binion, a Georgia Tech grad and the football editor for Georgia Tech's SB Nation community from the Rumble Strip. Rob has a very heavy background in analytics, so as you'll see, many of his assessments are numbers-driven. Unfortunately, Rob is an exceptionally nice guy, so this wasn't nearly as contentious as we had hoped it would be, but still very insightful and a great preview of Saturday's matchup. Enjoy.
Today, for a very special preview of Pitt's upcoming game against Georgia Tech, we are joined by Robert Binion, the football editor on From the Rumble Seat, which is the Georgia Tech athletics blog. Robert, how you doing?
Doing great. It's good to be with you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining and, you know, being brave enough to sign up for the Panther Den, which is what we're going to call the hot seat of whatever this is. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself? Give us some background before we rightfully roast you over the coals, you know, for our Pitt Panthers.
Sure. I'm a lifelong Georgia Tech fan. Some of my earliest memories are going to games when I'm 4 years old with my dad. And I followed in both my parents' footsteps and went to Tech. I finished in 2009 and have moved around a good bit since then. But one constant has been my connection with Georgia Tech football and college football in general. So it's always fun to get to talk about it with other guys from schools who care just as much about somewhere different, and excited to be here today. I've been with From the Rumble Seat for about 2 years, and most of my writing in particular comes from an analytics bent, and you can see that check out any of the preview that I'll put out on Thursday this week for this game.
Excellent. So just to sort of set the scene, why don't you tell us, you know, through both your personal lens and the lens of a Georgia Tech fan, what are your honest, and please feel free to be honest, we can take it, thoughts of the Pitt football program?
So I think of Larry Fitzgerald, and I think of Aaron Donald, and I think that when Pitt doesn't have a game record like that, that it's just kind of meh. It feels like a game that Tech should win 60 or 70% of the time from our expectations. I was just looking at the 24/7 sports team talent index, and Tech's 33rd and Pitt's 37th. So that was actually closer than what I expected, but it feels like a team that we should be able to out talent regularly. And then I pull up the series record and Pitt has won 5 of the last 6, and it's kind of devastating.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, the way you were describing that, a lot, I feel a lot is how we feel towards Georgia Tech. Every year this game comes up on the schedule, and I actually had a buddy of mine the other day, not a big gambler, but he said, I will bet on Pitt against Georgia Tech, because he said, that's one game I know we're going to win. And, you know, I wouldn't go that far, but I do typically feel pretty comfortable about Georgia Tech. And I think more so it's the recent history. And I think a big part of it for me is, you know, that transition phase from moving out of the triple option. Obviously, they're getting further and further away from that. But these last few years, it just kind of felt like a game that we should go in and take care of business. But it's funny here from your perspective. Obviously, we're just, you know, coastal fans who think too highly of our team and think we can win it every year, because we all can win it every year.
And we all have. So
love it. Well, I know before we actually started recording, Dave was asking a little bit about that triple option, but are you as upset as he is that Georgia Tech decided to go away from that scheme?
I think it was time to go away from it, but it gave me 12 years of absolute delight, and I am so glad that we did it. You know, we played Kennesaw State in our FCS game a couple of weeks ago, and they're coach is one of the former assistants under Johnson at Tech. And it was so much fun just to see when it works, man. It is just such a thing of beauty. And definitely I spend some time during the summer every year rewatching some games from 2014 and just the magical journey when absolutely no one could stop us for three quarters of the season. You know, the option took Tech to heights that hadn't been to in 20 years and really helped to overcome what's kind of a perpetual talent gap with obviously some of our biggest rivals. And so I have nothing but fondness and admiration for the offense and for Coach Johnson. That being said, I think it was time for a change, and now we're seeing some of the difficult fruit of that big of a change.
Before we get into the season this year and our preview, I want to ask you about your perspective on the infamous 2014 Pitt versus Georgia Tech matchup whenever Pitt fumbled five times in the first quarter. For us Pitt fans, that's a game we don't talk about anymore, but how was that viewed in the Georgia Tech football community?
So I kind of, Pitt's a joke. Definitely was a feeling that came away from that game. I mean, it was one, I think it was right in the middle of the season, if I remember right. And it was right when our offense was starting to take off. But then it was like, okay, these guys are just going to hand it to us, I guess, and we don't really have to worry. And I wasn't one of the fumbles like on our 1 yard line after a long run. I mean, it was just ridiculous how everything went in our favor. And then nobody was going to stop the offense after all that. So it was a fun one.
Yeah. James Conner got chased down like a 60 or 70 yard run and got punched out. And whenever that happened, it was over, but it only got worse from there.
Yeah.
So getting into this season, our teams both have one similarity. We lost to a MAC school. Whenever that happened here, everyone wanted to burn down the entire campus, fire all the coaches. The season's over. How did your fan base handle that? Because you guys have bounced back since then. You look like a solid team.
Yeah. Honestly, we could just kind of – we're asking for advice right now. Emotionally, how did you get over it?
You can ask my wife about that evening. It wasn't a whole lot of fun. I had to go outside. I think the big picture was – complete meltdown. There's, three or four different message boards that I'll check in on, and every single one of them was setting records for number of posts, number of views. I mean, it complete chaos. The views that we had on our site that week were the biggest we've had in like 6 years. So people were upset and they were letting their emotions come out. And I think there's about 20% of the fan base who thinks that Collins can do absolutely nothing wrong. And so a game like that, they find a way to blame it on Paul Johnson, who's, sitting in a cabin in North Carolina, smoking a cigar, laughing about all of it. But so almost more of the venom was against that 20% of the fan base than it was even against Collins. It's like, can you guys just be honest about how bad this is? So you've got that going on. And then we played way above expectations for three straight weeks. And that's the only thing that caused the meltdown to end. So I don't think I have good emotional management tips for you, but just to say, if you outperform expectations three straight weeks, then the meltdown just goes away. So I think one of our fan bases is likely to go close to back to that, depending on how this game goes this weekend.
It didn't even take us 3 weeks. I know there are still a lot of people who are still team fire Narduzzi, but I know us, we had the conversation of, hey, we lost to Western Michigan 2 weeks ago, just hung 77 on a terrible New Hampshire team. Why can't we win 9 or 10 games this year? Yeah, we're all back in.
We hopped off the ledge really quickly. We were up there and we were dangling from it for a full week.
And I would say one different point of context is that you guys are 7 years in with Narduzzi, I think. We're year three of Collins. And so there was the emotional, like, he's got to go. But practically, financially, it's just a 0% possibility. So it just doesn't do you a whole lot of good to dwell there for very long.
Yeah. Coming from one school whose coach is a douchebag to another school whose coach is a douchebag, after another 4 years, I think you'll understand.
That's not helpful.
So speaking of, our more sour feelings towards Jeff Collins, what's your perspective of the handshake last year and the bearing that will have on this game?
Well, if we can trust what he said this morning, it's not going to have any bearing. You know, apparently they kissed and made up at ACC Media Days and the whole thing's in the past. From our perspective, it was one of the few times that Collins has actually been like a real person since he's been here. And so it was kind of a breath of fresh air. It wasn't just, you know, the media sound bites. It wasn't just the tropes that he gives off after every single game, no matter how we play. And so it's like, oh, there's a real person inside of there who actually responds to, you know, real things that happen and real emotions. So was it relatively juvenile? Probably, but it was actually encouraging that there's a human and not just a, you know, Instagram focused robot in there somewhere.
So what you're saying is John should stop sending him threatening direct messages.
I don't think they're going to do any good.
Darn.
Noted.
Yeah, I heard when I listened to Narduzzi's press conference this morning and he said that whole thing, you know, they talked at ACC Media Day, you know, no hard feelings. That was, I'm not going to lie, I was pretty disappointed. I was hoping that was going to be a nice little coaches rivalry that stemmed for a while, maybe even a little jawing at each other at midfield before or after the game. So I have to say I'm a little disappointed by that.
I don't know much about Collins, but Narduzzi strikes me as a guy who holds a grudge big time. So I was surprised that he kissed and made up. I was hoping maybe they'd do it again this year, meet at midfield before the game and throw down.
It'll be a cold day in hell before you convince me that Pat Narduzzi's over that.
I think that's probably right. I don't think Collins is quite the same way. And so it could be a one-sided grudge that maintains, but I don't see it having enough fuel from both sides to be as interesting as we would probably like it to be.
So moving on a little bit more about Georgia Tech, because I'm not going to lie. I watched the game against UNC. Hadn't watched any of the previous three. You know, a couple things that stood out to me was, you know, the flip flop at the quarterback spot. Also, Quez Jackson on defense is an absolute animal. That was one guy who just stood out to me as that's a dude who's NFL level talent. But outside of that, you know, what's someone who, as a Pitt fan, hasn't watched much Georgia Tech football, largely unaware of the football team, what's something we should know about this year's team?
Yeah, you mentioned the quarterback thing, but that's been absolutely the story of the season. So, you know, Jeff Sims started every game last season as a true freshman. There was absolutely no doubt he was the guy coming into this year. He was as bad as you could possibly be for three series against Northern Illinois, and then hurt his shoulder. And so, you know, it was obvious that he wasn't going to play the rest of the game. And Jordan Yates came in and was serviceable, efficient, probably above what we expected. You know, led three touchdown drives, had us in position to win if the D hadn't fallen apart at the end. I had terribly low expectations, honestly, for him, but he played really, really well in the FCS game, and then really held up against Clemson. Didn't turn the ball over, moved the ball, had almost a 40% success rate, which last year against Clemson, we were like 20%. So, he seemed like really he was going to be a game manager type that definitely lacked the upside of Sims, but we were all prepared to go forward with him. And then he starts out just pitifully against Carolina. Sims comes in the middle of the second quarter and plays so much better than he's ever played before. So, it's been a roller coaster. I think there's no doubt that you'll see Sims start, and would probably have to be an injury situation for him to get pulled this week just because of how good he looked against Carolina. And with him, you're going to see a lot of, you know, variety in the running game. He's going to be involved a lot. The other two guys who are going to get the most carries most likely are Jahmyr Gibbs and JP Mason. But the guy who's been our highest graded running back on PFF this year is Dante Smith, and he usually gets 4 to 6 touches a game, and they're often explosive. So Sims, Gibbs, Mason, Smith, those guys are going to have probably 70% of the offensive touches. And then on the outside, really the only two receivers who ever do more than, you know, one catch a game are Kyrick McGowan and Malachi Carter. McGowan's a transfer from Northwestern, will line up mostly in the slot. He's the possession guy. He's the guy you look for in the red zone. He's been really, really good. And then Malachi Carter will do a little bit more on the outside. And if we're going to hit a deep ball, it's most likely going to be to him, but we don't hit a lot of deep balls. So yeah, you might be watching for that for a while. Offensive line is a patchwork of transfers and guys left over from Johnson. You know, UNC was their best game, but they're definitely below average and are right for the taking from Pitt's front, as has been the case in many of the previous matchups. So on the defensive side, it's been really interesting because, you know, last year our front seven was just horrific. And this year they've been so much better than previous years, better than expectation. You mentioned Quez. He was horrible last year. He couldn't make a run fit to save his life. He missed tackles left and right, and he has absolutely turned it up this season. But the guy who we're all can't stop talking about is Charlie Thomas. And so he's PFF's number one graded linebacker in the country after 4 weeks. He had 4.5 tackles for loss, 3 pressures against UNC, and he has just been a missile. He barely played against Northern Illinois. Nobody knows why. And then since then, they've absolutely unleashed him. And so Thomas and Jackson are the two guys coming from outside linebacker that are going to really make plays. And then up front, we've gone to a 3-man front the last 2 weeks instead of a 4-man. And I think it's really been helpful for our inside guys just have to worry about being a zero gap or a zero tech, you know, take up the center kind of player. The defensive ends are much more talented than the defensive tackles, and it's let them be a little bit more havoc producing. So Jordan Dominick is the main guy that you'll watch for off the edge. And generally our secondary is the most highly recruited part of our team, the highest rated, and they've been probably the worst position group. And if you guys can figure out why that is, I would love for you to tell me, because I cannot, and I'm worried about it.
Well, I mean, you guys have certainly improved a lot from a team that gave up over 200 yards to arguably the worst starting Division I running back. Are you aware of that?
No, I was not aware of that, but I'd love to know more.
Oh, well, I have a fun one for you. Through week 3, Vincent Davis, who ran for about 240 yards against Georgia Tech last year, through 3 weeks, he was the only FBS running back to have over 30 carries and below 2.7 yards per carry. But that game against Georgia Tech earned him the starting role, presumably until he graduates, even though there's two or three guys behind him who are better. So I'm both rubbing this in your face and like deeply upset at you because you let this happen.
Collins was just playing the long game. He knew that we had nothing left to play for last year, and he knew that we were setting ourselves up for this matchup.
I got to give it to him. He pulled it off with that one. Yeah. So that is a big theme of ours. Vincent Davis has been, you know, kind of like our bell cow for, you know, the first few weeks, a little bit less.
It's hilarious to call someone his size a cow.
Yeah. He's about 5'8",
like 160.
Yeah. And we have a guy in Izzy Abanikanda who the coach has hyped up all through camp. You know, 5'11", 220, runs a 4.4, prototypical, you know, future NFL guy. And he's barely been able to get touches. Last week, they worked him in a little more, but it's been very frustrating. So watch out for that this weekend. See if they trot out number 22 on the first series. If that's the case, I'm going to need a lot of beer to get me through the afternoon.
So last year, Vincent Davis rushed for 247 yards against you guys. Wouldn't bet on that happening again. What is your prediction for this week? What scares you about Pitt? What do you think you can take advantage of?
I don't think that that's going to happen on the ground. That area seems to have been cleaned up maybe more than anything else on the team so far. We're holding opponents to negative 0.24 EPA per rush attempt through 4 games. And so basically, you know, you run the ball 4 times, you lose a point of value the way the defense is playing right now. What scares me is deep balls to Addison. What scares me is absolutely wrecking our offensive line, not being able to block Kalijah Yancey, not being able to block Habakkuk. And we'll probably lose some sleep on Friday thinking about what that could look like. But, you know, the defense gave up a 63-yarder to Howell, and there were probably 2 or 3 other deep balls that he should have hit that he normally would hit. Explosive passes are absolutely where we can be had, and if you're getting pressure on Sims with that front, that's when he starts turning the ball over, when he starts running backwards and taking 15-yard sacks. So that's the, you know, those are clearly the two fears in my mind and the things that Pittsburgh is set up to take advantage of.
Funny thing about that explosive passes comment, we have the best quarterback in the ACC. I don't care what anyone has to say about Sam Howell or
history,
whoever Clemson's trotting out there, but we got Kenny Pickett out there.
So, I mean, do you guys make jokes about how old he is, or is it just us?
Yes.
Yes, but also our discussions around Kenny Pickett are about how blessed we are to watch him trot out there every Saturday. But yeah, it doesn't hurt that he's been, our guy every Saturday since I was a junior in college.
Since World War II is what I heard, but I don't know.
He's aged like fine wine. I think he already has more touchdown passes this year than he does in any year of his career. So honestly, if he keeps wanting to come back until he's 30, mathematically speaking, and you're obviously a big math guy, I think that would put him on pace for like 200 touchdowns by age, like per season by age, like 28 or 29.
So he needs to call Chris Winkie and figure out how you like tie in minor league baseball, and then he gets to come back and 209 touchdowns in 2030.
He's going to be Brendan Whedon. Yeah. So this is a question that we ask all of our guests, because we are the number one pro Kenny Pickett podcast in the world. What is your prediction for Kenny Pickett's stat line on Saturday?
So my sense is that, you know, you guys mentioned the running game struggles, and we've generally been relatively stronger defending the run. So I think he throws the ball, you know, more than average. I jotted one down. I'll say 25 of 38, 302 yards, three touchdowns. And I think he does throw a pick, because we've been getting pretty good pressure.
How dare you say a number under 400?
Did he get 400 this year?
He got 400 and a half last week.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Sorry. I was not following the New Hampshire game too closely, I'll be honest.
Actually, it was a half and one drive, but we tend to be a little bit more optimistic about Kenny Pickett.
We ordered Kenny Pickett Steelers jerseys, if that puts it in any context.
Yeah, I did. I did put an order for a couple Kenny Pickett Steelers jerseys. And I tell you what, if you would have said that like a year and a half ago, everyone in Pittsburgh would have lost their mind and called you an idiot. And now there's just like half of our replies on Twitter just like, hey, I wouldn't mind seeing Kenny try out there next year. We're done. Everyone's done with Ben. Throw him away. Let's get KP suited up.
You would definitely increase the average air yards happening in the Pittsburgh offense, I think.
Well, I think John could do that like by himself.
I'm not throwing any swing passes to the running back on 4th and 10. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, now that we have the Kenny prediction, you know, our score predictions will come a little later, but while we have you, what do you got this week? You know, we got a 4-point spread, Pitt's favored by 4. That's what I saw the line open at, but what are you thinking happens down there in Atlanta this week?
Yeah, I ran my model this morning, which you can yell at me about on Twitter if you want, but I came back with Pitt by 0.26 points. So we've got the definition of a toss-up. You know, Pitt's about 3 points better on paper, but throw in the home field advantage, and it's almost dead even in the numbers that I run. I think, you know, I put a little bit more weight on the relatively terrible schedule that Pitt's played than some other places probably do, and GT's play-by-play numbers have actually been really, really good in every game. I mean, we're very clearly a, you know, a 3-1 team who lost just an outrageous game the first week. So, use my math and then add my GT Homer glasses, and I'll take Tech 31-28. I mean, I think it's super close. I think it comes down to the end, but I think we come out on the right side of this one.
Well, we'll laugh at you when you're wrong.
I would expect no less.
So we really do appreciate you, you coming on. Would you like 20 seconds to plug whatever you would like?
Sure. I write 2 or 3 times a week from the Rumble Seat. All my stuff's on my Twitter, which is Robert_Binion. And the main thing I'm really excited about this year is that I built a model over the summer to predict the spread of every game. And so I put out the new ratings every Monday, and then I'll put out game picks every Thursday. And so far we're hitting about 55% against the spread, which is better than I would have expected, better than I would have hoped for. And I'm really happy with how the model's working so far. So always happy for more people to have eyeballs on that, to yell at me that your team's ranked too low and that somebody else is too high. And we can have some fun together on Twitter. But yeah, check us out at FTRS blog and check me out at Robert_Binion.
Awesome. Robert, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Go Panthers.
Hammond stretches across, plows with those legs, and scores. his third touchdown of the game.
Next!
All right, so we just talked a lot with Rob about the Georgia Tech game, but one thing that was noticeably absent was our predictions for this game. Maybe it was because Rob threatened us with his gun if we said that Pitt was going to win, so we gave him a bunch of fake predictions, but let's hear some real ones. John, what do you think is going to happen in this game?
I think it's going to be a close game. I think every game since that infamous five fumble game has been close when these two teams have met. So I'm going to go Pitt 38, Georgia Tech 28. I'll have you know, I said Pitt would score 77 last week against New Hampshire, so I'm on a hot streak.
Yeah, I think this might be the week that Pitt's offense comes back to earth a little bit, but I think the defense steps up in that absence. Still going to put up 30 points. I'm going to go Pittsburgh Panthers 30, Georgia Tech 23. We cover the spread.
Honestly, after hearing Rob talk about how his big question is their secondary, it actually made me more confident in Pitt's ability to score for this game and possibly to win. They do have Georgia Tech does have a quarterback that can pound the rock. That's Jeff Sims, and Pitt historically performs poorly against running quarterbacks, especially if they can threaten to run or pass on a given play. I would have to say 45-38 Pitt. I think Pickett's a little bit too much for him, and the defense forces the two punts necessary to win a game.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Loyal Sons podcast. Also, thank you to Robert Binion for joining us and being our first ever guest on the pod. Thank you for joining. Remember, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Cable Faithful. Also, subscribe to us anywhere you listen to your podcasts. We'll see you this weekend in Atlanta as the Pitt Panthers take on Georgia Tech at noon. That's right, Coastal Special, right at noon on the ACC Network. We'll see you down at Mario's Oakland Saloon if you want to come join us, drink some beers, eat some food, and root for Kenny Pickett. As always, hail Loyal Sons of Pittsburgh. Touching me, touching you. Hopefully we actually go to Mario's. That's a good segue.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Yeah. I think we kind of have to now. So well done.
I'm glad I locked that in.